What if the person controlling your every thought was you? I woke up in a world built from mirrors and lies. A psychological labyrinth designed by someone who called himself him. But the deeper I went, the more the lines blurred. Was he my captor? Or my creation? Every room exposed a truth I had buried. Every reflection showed a self I had tried to forget. This isn't just a story about manipulation. It's about identity, survival, and what happens when you finally confront the voice in your head and realize it doesn't belong to a stranger. It belongs to the version of you that never stopped breaking. Welcome to the Skillful Art of Manipulation podcast. If you haven't already, please consider following us on your favorite podcast platform. Today we present to you Veil of Illusion. Let's dive into this thrilling narrative together. Chapter 1. The Invitation. I used to believe the mind had borders. That there were clear limits to what it could take before it bent, or broke, or turned in on itself. I used to think madness was a place far away. Something you stumbled into after trauma or time, or the wrong pill slipped beneath your tongue. But madness didn't feel like falling. Felt like home. And now I can't tell where I am. Who I am. Whether I'm still her, the girl I once was, or something else entirely. Something he created. Or maybe something he simply revealed. But I'm getting ahead of myself. It began with silence. A thick, unnerving kind that pressed in around me like fog, even though the world kept moving. Cars passed. Horns blared. My phone vibrated. But none of it reached me. I sat on the edge of my twin mattress, arms wrapped around my legs like a shield, and stared at the pale, peeling paint on the wall across from me. There were cracks that looked like veins, reaching upward like hands grasping for something just out of reach. That day I had reached my limit. I was broke. Not just in my bank account, but in the kind of way you can't admit out loud. I hadn't eaten in almost 2 days. Not out of willpower or self-control, but because I'd prioritized paying rent over food again. My landlord had started knocking with a rhythm that felt personal. Deliberate. Mocking. I didn't answer the door anymore. My job at the coffee shop was gone. Budget cuts, they said. As if you needed a full-time budget to steam oat milk and endure the groans of businessmen too fragile to accept their orders had been messed up. As if I wasn't already invisible before they erased me. I had stopped calling my mother weeks ago. Not that she'd noticed. People don't like broken things, even when they're blood. So I sat there in the silence, wondering if the world would keep spinning if I just stopped being. I wasn't suicidal, not exactly. Just exhausted. Curious. Drained enough to imagine what it would feel like to disappear completely. And if anyone would notice the shape I left behind. And then I heard it. Light. Not a knock. Not footsteps. Just that low, slick sound of paper against wood. I blinked, sat up slowly, and stared at the gap beneath the front door. There it was. An envelope.
Wait.
Heavy like parchment stolen from a forgotten time. No stamp. No sender. Just my name written in an unfamiliar hand. Delicate, yet unnervingly precise. The ink shimmered faintly. Iridescent like oil on a puddle after rain. Sealed shut with a circle of blood-red wax. Stamped with a spiral that seemed to draw my eyes inward. I don't remember walking to the door. 1 second I was frozen in bed. And the next I was kneeling in front of it. Fingertips trembling as I picked it up. There was a scent on the paper.
Faint.
Almost imperceptible. Like burnt roses and ozone. Like a memory trying to come back but afraid to be seen. Opened it. Inside was a single card. Thick black, smooth as glass. On one side, embossed in silver foil, were 6 words. We've been watching. You're ready now. That was it. No explanation. No instructions. Just those 6 words. And a strange, undeniable certainty crawling up my spine like cold fingers on bare skin. I should have laughed. Should have crumpled it, tossed it, buried it under the pile of unpaid bills and expired coupons. But instead I pressed it to my chest like it meant something. Like it had found me at the exact moment I needed to be found. That night I didn't sleep. The air in my apartment felt heavier than usual, like the walls were listening. I kept the lights on, but the shadows didn't recede. They lingered in the corners, deep and still and watchful. It happened around 3:17 a.m. I remember the exact time because I was staring at my phone, watching the minutes tick by, heart thudding like I was being chased even though I hadn't moved. And then he appeared, not through the door, not on my screen, but in my room. First, I thought it was sleep paralysis. I'd had it before. That choking stillness, the pressure on your chest, the sense of something wrong just outside your vision. But this was different. He stood at the foot of my bed. Unnaturally so. Wrapped in a suit so black it seemed to suck the light from the air around him. His face was cloaked in shadow. No features, just a smooth void that pulsed faintly like a heartbeat. But I could feel his eyes. Watching me. No, not watching. Studying. Do you want to know the truth? He asked, his voice low and soft, like silk unraveling in water. It wasn't threatening. It wasn't kind. It was something else entirely. Neutral like a scalpel. I tried to speak. Couldn't. My mouth opened, but no sound came out. So I nodded. That was my first mistake. His hand extended. Long fingers. Too long. Nails clean, manicured, but sharp. Not claws, but not human either. I reached out. The second our skin touched, reality cracked like glass under pressure. My bed disappeared. So did the room. So did gravity. I was falling, no moving, but not through space. Through memory. Through thought. Through some kind of mental corridor that smelled like candle smoke and rotting lilies. When I landed, it was soft. I opened my eyes and gasped. I was in a hallway made entirely of mirrors. Floor, walls, ceiling. All reflective but none showing me. Instead, each mirror held a version of myself. Some looked just like I remembered. Others were warped, starving, weeping, smiling too wide, dressed like strangers, covered in bruises I didn't recall earning. Some were laughing. One was staring back at me, blood running from her nose as she whispered something I couldn't hear. I turned in place, heart hammering. The hallway had no end. Or maybe too many. Where am I? I asked, my voice hoarse, unreal. He was behind me now, though I hadn't heard him move. This is the labyrinth, he said. The place between truth and lie. Where all the veils fall away. I spun around. He was still featureless. Still that dark suit. But now. There were cracks forming in his shadow. Light bleeding out like veins. Why me? I demanded, voice rising. Why now? He tilted his head. Because you were already unraveling. I just gave you a thread. The mirrors rippled. One showed my mother, alone in the kitchen, whispering into the phone. I can't help her anymore, she's not right. Another showed my ex-boyfriend in bed with someone else. The timestamp overlay confirming it had been during our third anniversary. Another still showed me, staring into a mirror, smearing lipstick across my face while crying so hard I couldn't breathe. No, I whispered, turning away. These aren't real. Not real to you, he said. But that doesn't mean they're not true. My knees buckled. I collapsed, palms scraping against the cold, reflective floor. He knelt beside me. Truth is not a destination, he murmured. It's a process. And you've only just begun. The hallway started shifting. Walls folding in on themselves. Reflections merging. Memories bleeding together. I saw my face morph into my mother's. Into strangers. Into his. I tried to crawl backward, but the floor turned liquid. Sticky. Like molasses mixed with blood. And then I was falling again. This time into a room I knew all too well. My childhood bedroom. Except it wasn't right. The colors were off. The posters on the wall were things I never liked. A teddy bear I remembered burying in the backyard sat neatly on the pillow. And in the corner my mother sat, smiling. Except. It wasn't her. Not really. Her mouth moved, but the voice that came out belonged to him. You're beginning to see, he said, her lips moving out of sync. This is only the beginning. Backed up. The door vanished behind me. The walls began to breathe. The air pulsed. My thoughts cracked. "This is a game," I whispered. "A trick." "No, my dear," he said, still wearing her face. "This is the unveiling." And in that moment I knew. I was inside something far beyond logic. Something built not with walls but with memories. With guilt. With shame. A psychological maze custom designed to tear me apart. And he was the architect. I would have to walk it. All of it. If I ever wanted to find my way out, or figure out if there was an out, I'd have to survive the labyrinth. Even if it meant becoming something I no longer recognized. Even if it meant becoming his. Chapter 2. The mirror that lied. There are places inside the mind we're not meant to go. Rooms locked for a reason. Voices buried because they know too much. Memories smoothed over like bruises covered with concealer. We live on the surface and call it safety. But once you fall, really fall, those rooms open. The mirrors crack. And the lies you've told yourself stop whispering. They start screaming. That's what the labyrinth did to me. The moment I realized I couldn't leave, something inside me fractured. It wasn't just panic. It was something deeper. An unraveling of the little threads I'd sewn together to keep myself whole. All the denial. All the self-soothing affirmations. The lies I whispered to survive. He stripped them from me like layers of skin. I don't remember falling asleep. In fact, I don't think I did. Sleep in the labyrinth doesn't work the way it used to. Time folds. Base breathe. Night and day are suggestions, not laws. One moment I was curled in the corner of my replica bedroom, knees clutched to my chest, rocking back and forth to the rhythm of my own heartbeat. The next I was standing. The room had changed. No longer my childhood haven, but a long corridor soaked in crimson light. The floor shimmered like obsidian. The walls pulsed gently, like a throat swallowing something too big. I moved forward. Not because I wanted to. 'Cause I had to. There's a gravity here, subtle but absolute. You think you're making choices, but the labyrinth nudges you. It learns your rhythm, your fears, your memories. Doesn't just trap you, it becomes you. First, the corridor was empty. Then the whispers began. At first soft, like the rustling of leaves. But they grew louder with every step. I couldn't understand the words at first. Just a chaos of syllables slithering around my ears. Then a phrase cut through like a shard of glass. "You don't deserve to be loved." Froze. The voice was mine. Not the version I use in conversation, the one I polish for public consumption.
Whoa.
It was the raw, cracked version. The one that comes out at 3 a.m. after a panic attack, after a bottle of cheap wine, after the last person I trusted walked out the door. I spun around, but there was no one there. Just my reflection, distorted in the wall. Except, it wasn't mimicking me. It was watching me. Her head tilted first. Then her lips parted. "You remember the closet," she said. "When you were 6. When you thought hiding would make it stop." I stumbled back. That memory wasn't real. No, it couldn't be. But the girl in the mirror kept talking. Her eyes were hollow. Her voice steady. Cold. "He came in anyway. Didn't he?" "Stop," I whispered. "You didn't tell anyone. You never did. Because even back then, you knew no one would believe you." I said stop. The corridor pulsed. The light shifted from crimson to violent orange. The floor cracked beneath my feet. I tried to run, but the ground turned to tar, pulling at my ankles, dragging me down. Behind me, dozens of mirrors lined the walls now. Each one held a different version of myself. Laughing. Screaming. Bleeding. Some stood completely still, their eyes black voids. Others pounded at the glass as if they were the ones trapped. I was the reflection. "Welcome to the Hall of Selves," he said. His voice slithering from everywhere and nowhere. I looked up. He stood at the end of the corridor, arms outstretched, the air around him warping like heat off pavement. "Here," he continued, "you'll meet the ones you killed to survive." I didn't understand. Not yet. But I followed him. Because in the labyrinth, refusal is still obedience. The moment I stepped past him, the mirrors began to hum. And the first door appeared. Narrow. covered in carvings I couldn't decipher, symbols that felt ancient and wrong. I reached for the handle. It burned my skin, but I didn't flinch. The room behind it was a copy of my college dorm, perfect down to the chipped dresser and the half-eaten sandwich on the desk. And on the bed, her, the me from 5 years ago. She had long, untamed hair, eyes ringed with insomnia, skinny arms covered in half-healed scars. She didn't look up. She was writing. I stepped closer. The notebook in her lap was filled with the same sentence, over and over. I will be better. I will be better. I will be better. Her voice was flat when she finally spoke. You left me here. I swallowed. I didn't know you were still. Still what? She snapped, finally looking up. Her eyes were bloodshot. Still hurting. Still waiting for someone to come back and tell me it gets better. I am you, I whispered. I'm sorry. But she shook her head. No, you're not me anymore. You became someone else. You put me in a box and left me behind. I wanted to reach for her. I didn't. She went back to writing. I turned and left. The door slammed shut behind me. Another door appeared. This one smaller. Blue. Childish. I knew what was behind it before I even touched the knob. I was 7 years old again, sitting under the table in the kitchen, watching my father's shadow rage across the linoleum, his voice like thunder, my mother sobbing, glass breaking. The little version of me under that table wasn't crying. She was silent, staring at the wall with wide, unblinking eyes. Dissociating. The only way we knew how to survive. She didn't speak to me, didn't look at me, because she didn't know I existed. I had buried her so deep that even I forgot her face. The third door appeared without warning. I didn't recognize the room. First, it was a blank white space. Terrible, cold, a hospital maybe, but wrong. There was a chair in the center, and strapped to it, me again. But this version was too thin, too still. Her head hung low, hair matted to her face. Tubes ran from her arms into nothing. I stepped forward. Her eyes opened, and she screamed, a scream so raw it split the air. I fell to my knees, clutching my head. The walls bled red. The floor shook. Then he appeared beside me. He knelt, tilting my chin up with two fingers. These are the selves you disowned, he said, almost gently. To become who you are now, you had to bury who you were then. I didn't mean to, I choked out. I didn't know. He smiled. Of course not. That's the beauty of repression. You never see the graveyard you're building inside yourself. I wanted to hate him. I wanted to scream, to hit him, to demand he stop. But I didn't. Because part of me, maybe the most honest part, knew he was right. He stood again. Snapped his fingers. And the mirrors shattered. The sound was deafening. Like thunder in a glass cathedral. Shards flew everywhere, but instead of cutting me, they passed through me. Or rather, through who I thought I was. And then, silence. When I opened my eyes, I was back in the corridor. But it was different now. The walls were covered in writing. All of it mine. Journal entries I forgot I ever wrote. Emails I drafted but never sent. Confessions I scribbled into notebooks and burned. Words I said in therapy. Lies I told my mother. Promises I broke. They covered everything. And in the center of the floor was a mirror. Not on the wall. On the ground. I looked down. And finally I saw myself. Not one of the fractured versions. Not one of the buried ones. Me. Teared. Flawed. Behold, tears welled in my eyes. And for the first time since entering this place, I breathed. But then I heard his voice again. Soothing. Now that you've seen what's behind the veil, it's time to choose. The ground opened beneath me, and I fell again, this time deeper. This time into the part of the labyrinth where even mirrors fear to go, where the game shifts, and the real manipulation begins. Chapter 3. The thread of trust. There's something worse than being lied to. It's believing you've finally found the truth, only to realize it was just a more elegant lie. A softer poison. One that feels like hope when it enters your bloodstream. One that wears the scent of safety, the smile of a friend, the voice of something familiar. That's the kind of lie the labyrinth serves you in Chapter 3. And I drank it like water. When I landed, I didn't feel the impact. Just was weightless and heavy at once. My body suspended in a darkness so complete it felt liquid, like I was floating in ink. My thoughts echoed inside me like they had no walls to bounce off of. There was no up, no down. Just a gentle hum like breath just behind my ear. Not mine. Where am I now? I whispered, though I didn't expect a response. He answered anyway. You're in the place between memory and belief, he said. This is where we test what you're willing to trust. His voice didn't come from above or beside me. It came from inside my head, like a thought I hadn't had yet. Like it had always been there, waiting. Suddenly, light bloomed. Not in the distance, within me. I opened my eyes and saw my surroundings shifting like oil on water. The darkness peeled back to reveal a small town. It was quiet. Too quiet. Cobblestone streets. Street lamps with soft yellow glow. Houses I vaguely recognized. A white picket fence with rusted hinges. Birds chirp. Wind rustled the trees. It looked like a memory staged by a theater company. Eerily perfect. Annotized. And the people. They were smiling. All of them. My old neighbors. My third grade teacher. My first boyfriend. My dead aunt. All standing on the sidewalk waving. Well, smiling. Their mouths didn't move, but I heard them in my mind. You made it back. I took a step forward, but the concrete felt too soft, like walking on a memory about to dissolve. I don't belong here, I murmured. A woman stepped toward me. Middle age, blonde, familiar, and blinked. My heart seized. It was Claire, my college roommate. She died 2 years ago. Car accident, Rainslick Road, head-on collision. I saw the photos. Attended the funeral. I'd kissed her forehead before the casket closed, whispered an apology I couldn't explain to anyone but her. And yet, here she was, hair curled. It's warm. Hey, stranger, she said, like we'd just run into each other at a grocery store. You've been gone a while. My knees buckled. I stumbled into her arms. She was warm. Real. She smelled like lavender and coffee grounds. Wep. And she let me. For a long time, she just held me, stroking my hair the way she used to when the panic attacks hit hard during finals week. It's okay, she whispered. You're safe now. He can't reach you here. The moment she said it, my body tensed. Because for a split second, I believed her. I wanted to believe her. But then I saw her eyes. Not the color. The movement. Too precise. Too symmetrical. Like clock hands ticking in perfect unison. I miss you so much, I said, voice cracking. She smiled. I never really left. Her hand moved to mine, gripping tighter than it should have. Her nails dug into my skin. Flinch. Look down. They weren't nails. They were needles. Metal. Injecting something cold into my bloodstream. I shoved her away. Stumbled back. My head spun. The people on the street were closer now. Still smiling. Still silent. But their smiles were cracking at the edges. Unnatural. Their skin began to flake. One by one, they started twitching, jerking like puppets on tangled strings. And behind them, towering over the rooftops, was his silhouette. Watching. Always watching. Claire, the thing wearing her skin, spoke again. Her voice deepened. Layered with static and something much older than language. Why do you resist? She snarled. You came here because you wanted to be seen, heard, loved. And we love you. The world began to collapse. The town peeled apart like wallpaper set on fire. Houses melted. People screamed, not with mouths but with thought. Their pain surged through my chest like lightning. Ran until the town blurred into darkness again. My feet pounded against shifting terrain. Stone, then grass, then carpet, then nothing. Eventually, I fell through a wall I didn't see. And found myself in a room so familiar I wanted to vomit. It was his office. I had never seen it in the real world. And yet, I knew it. Mahogany bookshelves lined the walls, filled with red leather tomes. A fire crackled in a hearth that cast no heat. The air smelled like ink, old velvet, and secrets. He sat behind a desk, smiling, his face still featureless, but now outlined. Harper. As if he'd earned the right to reveal more of himself. Why did you run from her? He asked casually, folding his hands. She only wanted to help. She's dead, I spat. You used her. He cocked his head. I gave you what you wanted, connection. Forgiveness.
50.
All you had to do was accept it. None of it was real. Reality is subjective, he said. Is pain real? Or the memory of pain? Is love real if it comes from a dream? I stepped forward. Why are you doing this to me? His smile widened. Because you asked me to. Froze. No, I whispered. I never. Yes, you did, he interrupted. Not with words, but with need. You called out. Every time you stared into the mirror and begged to understand why no one stayed. Why you hated yourself. Why you couldn't escape the shame woven into your bones. My throat tightened. He stood now. His form towered. I am not your enemy, he said. I am your architect. He walked toward me, and the room shifted with each step. The desk melted. The fire turned black. The book screamed. You think this is torture, he continued. But it is revelation. The only way out is through. You must walk every corridor. Face every self. Trust and be betrayed. And in the end, if you are still you, then you'll have earned the truth. My legs trembled. I don't trust you. I don't need you to trust me, he said softly. I need you to trust yourself. The floor opened again. I screamed as I fell. But this time, I didn't land. Instead, I found myself suspended in a vast open void, stars flickering like dying neurons. A voice, not his, whispered in my ear. Child's voice.
Green.
You trusted him before, it said. You followed him because you were alone. You let him lead because no one else came. But now you see, trust is not always a gift. Sometimes it's a leash. I turned, but no one was there.
Just me.
Floating. Bleeding light from every memory I couldn't face. And then I understood. The labyrinth wasn't just a prison. It was a mirror. And him wasn't just a captor. He was a reflection of what I had given power to. My trauma. My guilt. My hunger to be chosen. And he had answered that hunger with open arms. But not for love. For control. Closed my eyes. And when I opened them, I was standing again. In front of another door. Painted white. Unmarked. Innocent. But I knew better now. I knew what waited behind every door wasn't truth. It was choice. And with shaking hands, I reached for the knob. Because for the first time, I was ready to question the story I told myself. Even if it meant shattering everything I thought was real. Chapter 4. Memory is a weapon. Have you ever questioned your most precious memory? Not the painful ones. Not the ones that wake you in a cold sweat or gnaw at your stomach during quiet moments. No, I mean the good ones. The ones you use to anchor yourself when everything else falls apart. The moments you cling to like a lifeline, whispering this was real. This meant something. What if you found out they were planted? What if you realized someone or something had built them for you? Would you still be you? That's the question the labyrinth asked me in Chapter 4. And I wasn't ready for the answer. The white door creaked open like a yawn in a funeral parlor. I stepped through expecting pain, violence, screams. Instead, gut light, golden, warm, innocent. It wrapped around me like the first spring breeze after a long winter. The kind that makes you forget how cold the world can be. The kind that makes you believe, just for a second, that healing is possible. And that's exactly what made it dangerous. I stood in a backyard I hadn't seen in years. Freshly mowed grass. A swing set swaying gently in the breeze. A dog barking somewhere out of sight. The air smelled like lemonade and sunscreen. It was perfect. Too perfect. I looked down. My hands were small again, child hands. My feet were bare, toes caked in dirt. My knees were scraped, just like that summer after second grade, when I fell off my bike chasing fireflies. Turn, and there she was, my mother. Oh, you have to understand, my real mother wasn't cruel, just absent. Fragile in that brittle, untouchable way. She loved me, I think, but not in the way I needed. She was always somewhere else. Mentally, emotionally, sometimes even physically. Sometimes gone for days. Sometimes just behind a door she refused to open. But this version of her. She knelt on the porch, arms wide open. Her hair gleamed in the sunlight. Her eyes were clear. Her smile genuine. And she called my name with a tone I'd never heard from her before. Come here, baby. I wanted to run into her arms. And I did. Even though everything inside me screamed trap. Even though I knew this was his work. I ran, barefoot and breathless, into that embrace. And for a moment, a single aching moment, I believed it. She wrapped her arms around me, warm and safe and steady. I love you, she whispered, voice shaking. I'm so sorry I left. The words hit me like a blow. Because I had waited my whole life to hear them. And now that they came, I didn't know what to do with them. Cried. Not because I believed her, but because part of me wanted to. A part of me that was still 7 years old, sitting in the dark, waiting for her to come back through the door with a hug and an apology. I missed you, I whispered into her shoulder. She pulled back, eyes shining. I was always watching. You just didn't know how to look. The warmth in her gaze deepened into something else. Hunger. Pride. Ownership. And suddenly I knew. This wasn't a memory. This was programming. I yanked myself away. No, I said. You're not her. She tilted her head. Does it matter? I want it to. She stood. The sky darkened behind her. The wind turned sharp. You think memory is sacred, she said. But it's just data. Input. The mind reshapes it 1,000 times before you even recall it. You don't remember events. You remember your last memory of them. And that memory. I gave it to you. The porch rotted behind her. The paint peeled. The swing set rusted in real time. I stepped back. She took a step forward. This moment, she said. This exact embrace. You've remembered it before, haven't you? Even though it never happened. Faltered. 'Cause she was right. I had imagined it. Replayed it in therapy. Wrote it in journals. Reenacted it in dreams so many times that I believed, deep down, that maybe it had happened once. Maybe just once. She smiled, reading the hesitation on my face. Does it really matter, she whispered. If I'm not real, if what you feel is? The world blurred. And the scene shattered. I was standing in a room of tapes. Hundreds of them. Old VHS reels stacked in towers that leaned and sighed like tired ghosts. Each labeled in sharp handwriting. First kiss, revised. Graduation, filtered. Dad's apology, false. You are enough, fabricated. Love, 2016, deleted. A screen flickered on. I watched myself, age 12, sobbing on the kitchen floor. My father towering over me. His face a blur of fury. But this wasn't how I remembered it. In my version, he'd apologized. Held me after. Said sorry. But this. He walked away. No hug. No warmth. No closure. My stomach turned. Behind me, him. He walked through the rows of tapes with reverence, like a priest in a cathedral. These are your sacred moments, he said. You edited them to survive. I didn't. You did, he snapped, for the first time letting fury bleed into his tone. You softened the pain, brightened the shadows, made monsters into misunderstood caretakers, turned abandonment into sacrifice. You lied to yourself because you were alone, and the truth was too heavy. He picked up a tape labeled, First Time Someone Said They Loved Me. Then he crushed it in his hand. No, I gasped. That one was real. I know it was. Are you sure? He asked, voice quiet again. Play it. I did. And watched myself at 17, sitting in the back seat of a car, breathless, clutching the hand of a boy whose name I couldn't remember. "I love you," he said on screen. But the real audio was different. "I like you," he had said. Just that. No love. The tape flickered. Overlaid memories. False inputs. My brain had added more over the years. To make it matter. To make me matter. Collapsed to my knees. "Why are you showing me this?" I whispered. He crouched beside me. "To free you," he said. "Every manipulated memory is a leash. And until you see which ones you wrapped around your own neck, you'll never break free." I looked up. "I'm not ready. None of us ever are." He stood, and the floor shifted again. I was falling, tumbling through shattered recollections like broken glass, each one cutting a little deeper. Not because they were lies, but because they were almost true. I landed in a room full of mirrors again. But this time they didn't reflect me. They showed the people I'd hurt. Every choice I didn't want to remember. A friend I ghosted after she opened up about her trauma. A boyfriend I used to distract myself from my grief. A coworker I lied about to save my job. My little sister crying through the crack in the door, begging me not to leave. "You think you're the victim," him said, stepping out from behind one of the mirrors. "But you've rewritten just as much as anyone else." "I was surviving," I said through clenched teeth. "And so was everyone else," he hissed. "So tell me, who gets to be the villain? The liar? The manipulator? You think I'm the monster here?" He gestured around the room. "I didn't write these. You did." I shook my head. "No. You built this place." "No," he said, stepping close. "You did. I just made it visible." The mirrors cracked, and behind them doors, hundreds of them, each one leading to a memory I had either twisted or tossed away. And I knew if I wanted to get out, I had to walk through all of them, alone, one by one. I turned to him. "Will I lose myself?" He smiled, not cruelly this time. "You'll lose who you pretended to be." He nodded and stepped through the first door. Chapter 5. Who I am is who he made. There comes a moment in every descent when you stop asking, "Who am I?" and instead ask, "Was I ever anyone at all?" When I crossed the threshold of the fifth door, I knew I wasn't walking into another memory. This wasn't about the past anymore. This was about what remained. What was left of me now that all the lies had been stripped away? What voice still echoed inside my chest when the mirrors were shattered, when every mask had been peeled off and laid at my feet like funeral offerings? The room was dark, not the suffocating black of earlier. This was something colder, an absence that hummed, a silence so deep it made me nauseous. The walls pulsed like the inside of a womb, wet, membranous, alive. I wasn't walking on a floor. I was walking on nerve endings. Every step I took sent ripples through the space, and each ripple triggered something. Whispers, images, sensations I didn't recognize. Or worse, almost recognized. Faces. Conversations. Flickers of lives that might have been mine. But I couldn't tell if they were dreams, hallucinations, or lives I had somehow lived and then abandoned like worn-out clothes. A girl named Nova calling me her sister. A man named Edison whispering, "Come back to bed, baby." A nurse's uniform. Syringe. A baby in my arms I couldn't name. None of these belonged to me. And yet, felt grief. Rage. Nostalgia. Like I'd lost them. Like they were lives I should have lived. A thousand alternate selves pressed against the walls of that space, clawing at me for acknowledgement. And in the center of the room, him. But this time, not as the looming figure. Not as the void-wrapped silhouette. He was me. Same height. Same face. Same hair pulled back in a loose braid. Wearing my favorite hoodie from college. Barefoot. Smiling. And when he spoke, it was my voice. "Welcome home," he said softly, opening his arms. "You made it through the false doors." Backed away. "No." He stepped closer. "But I am you. You used me. I reflected you. Every ugly truth. Every betrayal you called survival. Every sin you buried beneath trauma." He raised one hand. in it a mirror, not like the others. This one didn't show my face. Showed a wheel, spinning, vest, carousel of names, faces, lives, each one flickering like an old film reel. You don't remember them, he said, but you wore them, chuan, one at a time, whenever the pain became too great. He walked in a slow circle around me as he spoke, dragging his finger along my shoulder blade. You became what they needed. Daughter, lover, therapist, savior, villain. You forgot who you were so often that now. He tapped my temple. There's nothing left but masks. My knees buckled, fell to the floor. Then tell me, I whispered. If I was never real, who am I? He crouched beside me. His eyes, my eyes, shimmered with a cruel tenderness. You are who I sculpted. The girl who needed someone to tell her what to be. I obliged. I shook my head. No, you're lying. I only speak what you're afraid to say. He raised the mirror again. And now it did show me. Not as I was now. But as a child, mouth duct taped, hands tied to a chair, staring wide-eyed at a television that played Happy Family sitcoms on loop. I whimpered. That wasn't memory. That was indoctrination. I built you in fragments, he whispered. Each time you were hurt, I stitched something over the wound. Performance. Defense. Costume. And eventually, you forgot what skin felt like beneath all that armor. Crawled backward. My hands left wet streaks on the floor. Why are you doing this? He smiled. Because you asked me to. He screamed. No. You keep saying that, but I never. You begged, he interrupted. Not with words, but with choices. The lights flared. And suddenly, the walls were covered in transcripts. A timestamp. Every lie I told. Every time I said, I'm fine when I wasn't. Every smile I forced. Every secret I kept for the sake of harmony. Every compromise that left me hollow. I didn't know, I said. He tilted his head. Knowing is overrated. He offered his hand. Come, let me show you something. This time I didn't resist. Because something in me, something broken and exhausted, wanted to know how far the rabbit hole went. He led me into a hallway. Unlike the previous ones, this corridor wasn't surreal. It was clinical. White walls. Fluorescent lights. A buzzing overhead speaker repeating a phrase I couldn't quite make out. At the end of the hall, another door. Unmarked. I reached for the handle. My hand burned. Him leaned in. This is your origin, he said. The first choice. The first fracture. You don't remember it, but your body does. I turned the handle and stepped into the void. The room wasn't a room. It was a replica of a hospital ward. My hospital ward. The one I spent time in after my first breakdown. But this version was different. It was before me, years ago. And there on the bed, strapped down, a girl. Not me, but familiar. Her face half buried in bandages. And four in her arm. Monitors beeping steadily. A clipboard at the end of the bed labeled, Subject, Him 1. I moved closer. The girl stirred. Eyes fluttered open. And she was me. But not the me I remembered. This version of me was raw. Stripped of effect. Blank. As if someone had erased everything and left behind a breathing doll. I turned to him, shaking. What is this? This was the first time I entered, he said. You were broken. Shattered. They couldn't help you. So they gave you to me. I was institutionalized, I whispered. They said I made you up. And yet, he said, spreading his arms, here we are. He walked toward the girl in the bed, brushed a hand across her forehead. She begged me to make the pain stop, so I gave her what she wanted. Structure. Purpose. A voice inside the noise. He turned back to me. I am not a demon. I am the scaffolding you built to stay upright. Tears streamed down my face. All this time, I thought you were the manipulator. I was, he said gently. Because you needed me to be. Silence. I looked at the girl in the bed again, eyes half-lidded, still breathing. still waiting. Is she still in me?
Yes.
He nodded. She is what's left of your core. The last untouched version. The child you locked away when you chose performance over presence.
I stepped forward. Reached out.
My hand trembled. She didn't move. But her fingers twitched.
He felt me.
And we cried. I had spent so long surviving that I had forgotten there was someone left to save.
Not the persona. Not the mirror.
But her.
Myself.
Unmasked. When I turned around again, he was gone. The ward dissolved. I was standing in a hallway once more. This one lined with doors. Each marked with a name I didn't recognize.
Understood now.
They weren't just doors to memory. They were doors to possibility. I had been so afraid of losing myself. But the truth was, I'd been hiding from her all along.
In him.
He had only ever been my echo. Now it was my turn to speak. Chapter 6. The illusion of freedom. Freedom has a taste. It's not sweet. It's metallic, like blood against your tongue after biting it in your sleep. It's fleeting, dangerous, and almost always a lie. Especially here, in this place built from mirrors and made of wounds. A place where even your own thoughts betray you. By the time I reached the sixth chamber, my legs felt carved from rusted iron. My breath was shallow, like I had been breathing secondhand air for days. I wasn't sure how long I'd been here.
Hours.
Days. Years. Time meant nothing in the labyrinth. Only suffering did. And yet, this room felt different. No echoes. No whispers. No reflections. It was quiet. Too quiet. I stood in a long hallway, sterile white and impossibly straight, lit from above by a row of harsh, flickering lights that buzzed like insects on the verge of death. And at the far end, something I hadn't seen once since entering this place.
Door.
Real door.
Weathered.
No glowing runes. No whispering hinges. No symbols etched in bone. Just a doorknob. And a simple brass plate that read,
"Exit."
I didn't believe it.
Couldn't.
I stared at the word until it lost its meaning.
Exit. Exit. Exit.
Like some sick joke scrawled on a wall by a dying god. I looked behind me. The hallway stretched endlessly into darkness. For the first time, there were no doors lining the walls.
No detours.
No choices. Just forward.
Or back.
My pulse stuttered. Because I knew him. I knew his favorite game.
Oh.
Hope was his scalpel. He'd spend chapters carving you open with despair. Only to gently sew you up with a promise of escape. So you'd chase it. So you'd reach for it. So he could tear it from your hands and watch you bleed again. I took a step forward anyway. Because even if it was a lie, I needed it. I needed the idea of an ending. With every step I took, memories rose around me like ghosts trapped in static. Not whole scenes, just flashes. Mom sobbing on the floor with the phone pressed to her temple. My ex's hands around my throat. His words slurred. His apologies even sloppier. The sterile scent of a hospital room. A doctor shaking his head. A clipboard I wasn't allowed to see. The moments I had buried.
Denied.
Rewritten. But now they came back with perfect clarity. Like they'd been waiting for this hallway. Waiting for this exit. Because you can't leave until you own what you're leaving behind. The closer I got to the door, the heavier the air became. Like walking into a furnace. And then I heard him. Not above. Not around.
Inside.
Are you sure you're ready? His voice murmured, low and velvet and close to my ear. Ready to leave all of this behind.
The questions.
The selves.
The pain.
I ignored him. He laughed. You think freedom is the reward for endurance?
It's not.
It's the final illusion. The doorknob was cold. I wrapped my fingers around it.
Turned easily.
Too easily.
Soft click.
And the door swung open.
Like,
blinding. The world beyond the door was
normal.
I stepped through barefoot, breath hitched. It was morning.
Actual morning.
My apartment. The smell of toast. Birdsong through the cracked kitchen window. The ache in my chest vanished. My legs steadied. My vision sharpened.
I was home.
Somehow.
I was home. I stared at my couch, the photo frame on the mantle, my old textbooks on the table, even the burn mark on the countertop from the time I'd spilled a full mug of tea in a panic attack. It was all here, real, in touch, like none of it had happened, like I'd woken from a nightmare. Was that all it had been? Psychotic break. I turned in a slow circle, breath catching. The weight was gone. The dread. The voices. The mirrors. It was over. And for a moment I believed it. I let myself collapse onto the couch, laughter bubbling in my throat like I hadn't heard it in years. Cried. Wept. But then, my phone buzzed. I wiped my face and reached for it. Unknown number. No message. Just a single notification. Session number 6. Complete. My blood froze. Clicked it. The screen flashed white. And my reflection stared back. But not in the phone's black screen. In every surface of the room. The television. Toaster. The window. All of them reflected me. Except not quite. Each version of me was slightly different. Twitch here. Tear there. One grinned with blood on her teeth. One held a scalpel. One was whispering something I couldn't hear over and over again. The laughter died in my throat. I stood slowly, back toward the door. Tried the knob. My phone buzzed again. This time a voice memo. I tapped it with shaking hands. And his voice filled the room. I told you, didn't I? He said almost tenderly. Freedom isn't an ending. It's the final veil. The last deception. You didn't escape the labyrinth. You simply entered the deepest layer. No, I whispered, eyes scanning the walls, my breath fogging the mirror behind the TV. You're lying. Am I? Turned slowly. The room was wrong now. Too quiet. Too symmetrical. Too accurated. The kind of quiet that isn't absence of noise, but the design of it. My bookshelf blinked. Literally blinked. Eyes in the spines of the books. The coffee mug on the table wept black liquid. The rug was breathing. And the reflection in the mirror wasn't me anymore. It was him. Wearing my skin. Smiling with my teeth. Sitting exactly where I was sitting just moments ago. You don't get to leave, he whispered from inside the glass. Because there is no outside. I screamed. Grabbed a lamp. Smashed the mirror. But there he was again in the shards. Laughing. Reaching. Multiplying. Ran. Into the hallway. But the hallway didn't end. It stretched and turned and pulsed. Each door I opened led back to my apartment. Each mirror held a different version of me screaming to be let out. And then I saw it. The original exit door. Still ajar. Still marked with the brass plate. I ran back toward it. Skidded to a stop. 'Cause now, it was a mirror. And in it I was him. Not in his form. Not in his suit. But in his stillness. His gaze. His smile. And I knew he was never a separate being. He was never a tormentor from outside. He was born from the parts of me I refused to look at. He was me. Not in metaphor. But in truth. He was the survival mechanism that grew teeth. The false protector I let lead. The architect I fed with every silence. Every compromise. Every time I said I'm fine when I was dying inside. He was the version of me who would rather control than feel. And now. Now he had taken over. Because I had let him. Because freedom was never about leaving the labyrinth. It was about learning who built it. And I had been laying bricks my entire life. The last scene I saw before the door closed for good. Myself. Staring into the mirror. Smiling. And behind the glass her. The version of me I left behind in the hospital bed. Still watching. Still waiting. Still hopeful. And I whispered to her. I'm coming back for you. Even if I didn't know how. Even if there was no map. Even if I had to destroy him to do it. Chapter 7. The self that remains. There's a silence that comes before a final decision. Not peace. Not calm. Not stillness. It's the kind of silence that holds its breath. That listens. That waits. It's the silence inside the eye of the storm. Just before everything splits open. And in that silence, you face the question you've spent your entire life avoiding. What part of me am I willing to kill? To be free. That's where I stood now. At the center of the labyrinth. No doors left. No mirrors. No corridors. No more illusions. Just me and him. But he wasn't looming anymore. He wasn't cloaked in shadow or whispering from the cracks in the wall. He stood across from me in perfect stillness, wearing my body like it was custom tailored. And I stood barefoot, bleeding from 100 tiny fractures, none visible to the eye, but all of them seeping from beneath my skin like light filtered through old glass. We didn't speak at first. We just stared at each other. Two versions of the same truth. One forged in trauma. One born from survival. And between us, a space so thick with meaning I could barely breathe. Finally, he tilted his head. "You made it," he said. His voice was no longer a distortion. No longer dripping with manipulation or elegance. It was flat now. Plain. "Plain." "I always do," I whispered. "Do you?" he asked gently. "How many times have we stood here? How many times have you called this the end? Only to start it over again?" "Blink." "What?" He stepped closer, slow and measured. His eyes never left mine. "We're not in a linear story, darling. There's no beginning. No middle. No finale. There's just you wandering. Dreaming. Dismantling. Rebuilding. I don't trap you. You trap yourself." I stepped back. The ground beneath me shimmered like glass atop deep water. "Why would I do that?" He smiled, soft and terrifying. "Because chaos feels like control when you're the one holding the lighter." He raised his hand and snapped. The world around us collapsed. And reformed. Instantly. Now we stood in a cathedral. Gothic arches curved overhead. Stretching into an impossible sky where stars pulsed like open wounds. The pews were filled with every version of me I'd seen in the mirrors. Child. The addict. The liar. The girl who still waited for someone to save her. The woman who saved everyone else. They all stared silently. Some with hope. Some with fury. Some with hunger. "You built a religion out of your pain," he said, walking the center aisle. "You deified your trauma. Made it sacred. Made me sacred. You let the mask do the speaking so you wouldn't have to risk being wrong or fragile or real." I clenched my fists. "You manipulated me. You twisted my memories. You." "I was your shield," he snapped. "Your answer. You didn't want to feel the weight of being you, so you gave me the wheel." "I didn't lie. I protected. I obscured. I curated your perception like a work of art." He spread his arms. "Do you want it back now? The pain. The grief. The loneliness. Because once I'm gone, you'll have nothing to hold between yourself and the truth." Closed my eyes. Because he wasn't wrong. He never had been. That's what made him so dangerous. Every lie he told me was made from my own truths. Reshaped, polished, fed back to me like poisoned fruit in a silver bowl. I stepped forward slowly. The cathedral fell away. And we stood again in the first corridor. The one with the mirrors. But now the mirrors were blank. Silver gray and empty. Waiting. "I want out," I said softly. He turned to me. "You don't get to want out. You get to earn it." He held out a knife. Simple. Sharp. His blade reflected me. Not him. Not the mask. Not the broken pieces. Just me. Guard. A little ruined. But still here. Still alive. "What is this?" I asked, though I already knew. His voice was gentle. "The only way out of the labyrinth is to leave behind the part of you that needed it." I stared at the blade. "I can't kill you," I whispered. He smiled. "But you can stop feeding me." Silence. Breath. Then I lifted the knife. And I walked to the mirror. Not the real me. Not the broken ones. Just the labyrinth version. The mask I had used for so long I believed it was skin. I raised the blade to its surface. And it didn't reflect me anymore. It reflected her. The girl in the hospital bed. The untouched core. The one who still believed in something other than pain. I pressed the blade to the glass and whispered, "I'm coming back." The mirror shattered. The sound was thunder. The ground split, and him screamed, but not in rage, in relief, because in that final moment, I saw him for what he really was, a scared little thing, made from grief and need and silence. He wasn't evil. He was just me. Before I knew how to heal, before I chose to face the dark with open eyes, I woke up on the floor of my apartment. No mirrors, no whispers, no blood, just the morning sun leaking through the blinds. I lay there for a long time, staring at the ceiling, waiting for him to speak again. He didn't. And in that silence, I realized he was gone, not destroyed, not vanquished, but no longer in control. Because the labyrinth doesn't vanish when you walk through it, just stops being your god. I still hear echoes sometimes, late at night, when I walk past a mirror and flinch, when I feel the urge to fake a smile or agree just to keep the peace. But now I know better. I don't chase the exit anymore, because the real freedom wasn't escape. It was integration. It was pulling every broken version of myself out of the dark and saying, "You belong too." Even the rage, even the shame, even him, especially him, because he only ever wanted to protect me. He just didn't know how to let go. But I do. Now I do.